Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday morning, April the 29th, 2026. Rainy Wednesday morning here in the Marion area. 15 minutes past the hour, and we're joined in studio by legendary baseball umpire Larry Barnett, who shared some very personal news with us this morning. The fact that he has been diagnosed as of last month, March, with stage 4 terminal cancer. The diagnosis or prognosis, I guess, as we should say, is 6 months right now. But if you listen to the first hour, you would not know that by listening to Larry, because he is as jovial and normal as he has always been. Larry, I can't tell any difference in you since the last time I sat with you. I wasn't sure what to expect this morning, but I'm glad it's turning out the way it is.
Well, I'm just, like I say, I'm very, very positive. And I got, as I said before, I got a lot of that from my wife going through it, and she was such an inspiration, and I felt I better toughen up, buttercup. That's what I had to do, and that's what I'm trying to do.
And I know you have a friend listening out there this morning.
Yeah, Stan's my buddy. My brother and I went to my lawyer. He never had any brothers or sisters, so we adopted him. And he goes down to Florida in the winter, and he's back, and Stan has terminal cancer also. So we have a pull up who's going to go first. not really, but it's amazing. Both of us have the same problem and we're both dealing with it.
Is it helpful to talk to somebody who's dealing with something very similar?
Well, I talk to any and everyone that wants to talk. I mean, I really don't have a problem talking about it.
When I first learned of this, we talked on the phone and talked about you coming in here again, and you said something about where the cancer was and related it to baseball, which I thought was a great, when you said that, I thought, boy, coming from an umpire, that is a great way to look at this.
Well, I have it in the blood, I have it in my liver, and it's in my bone, and I said, three strikes and you're out. So it doesn't bode well for me.
No, but when you said that on the phone, because when I heard that you had this and I wanted to call you, I thought, well, you know, you never know what mood somebody's going to be in. And I thought when you said that, I thought, well, same Larry.
Well, usually if you'd have called and you say, how are you doing? I say, I'm dying. And my wife gets mad when I say that to people. I said, did I lie? But that's sort of the way I looked at it. Like I said before, so many young people have this dreaded stuff and don't have the opportunities that I've had and was blessed with. And that's who I feel bad for.
Just to recap for people who might be tuning in, tell people how you found out about this and what the doctors are saying now.
Well, I went and I had a lot of pain in my lower back, and now I'm getting some in the back of my head. And the doctor did a bone scan. And that's where they found it was in the liver and in the bone, and then it's in my blood, which I'm not a doctor, but I think that means it's traveling. So, you know, it's just the last doctor said 6 months. But he said, and it was great. He said, I've read all of this. I looked at all of this. I've been trained to know what they all mean. He said, but there's only one person, and he's smarter than every doctor put together is. He'll determine when you leave this world. And he said, I can't get any better than that. What I'm making is a guess. And he also said, you know, he said, I believe that he could snap his fingers and you wouldn't have any of it in his body, your body. He said, those are what miracles are. So do I think I'll have a miracle? I'm not thinking about that, but I would welcome it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. I every doctor I've ever talked to or interviewed over the years says attitude is a big part of it. And if attitude is a big part of it, Larry, you might have many years. You might outlive some of us here.
Well, Sharon, my wife had cancer at a young age, and her attitude was fantastic. She just, nothing beat her. And she'd get down after she had chemo, but she had a desire to live, a will to live. And the good Lord spared her life.
Is there any, I'm sure a lot of people are asking, is there any pain involved in this?
Right now I'm starting to get some pain in the back of my head and in my lower back. And I don't know if that's just being old and arthritis, but that's the only thing I really noticed. I noticed they said, they told me that you'll start to get yellowing in your eyes with liver cancer. So every day I look for that and I haven't seen any.
You know, it's interesting because I believe still one of the number one fears in this life is death. It's the unknown for a lot of people. Now that it's in front of you, it's always in front of all of us, but now that it's in front of you medically, is there any fear?
No, because I have been granted time to do what I think I have to do to be right with where I want to go. And that's not a fearsome thing.
Larry, how did you get into umpiring? Tell the story.
Well, I was sitting in study hall over at Elgin, ran across an ad in the umpire school for the umpire school in Florida in the Sporting News. And as a joke, clipped it out and sent it in. Started receiving literature back from the all-summer school, as I later learned. He'd get a letter for someone to come, and he'd start sending literature that day. And I decided that's what I wanted to do. My mother and father thought I probably should have gone to school to make something of myself, but I decided to go to the umpire school. So I went to Whirlpool, and I worked out there on the assembly line and got enough money to pay my way down. And at 19 years of age, they took me down and to Columbus, put me on an airplane, which I had never done before. We stopped twice between Columbus and Atlanta. I stayed overnight. I had to leave the airport and get into a hotel in Atlanta, which I had never done before. And the next day, I flew into Daytona Beach. And 6 weeks later, I graduated number one in my class.
What do you attribute graduating number one in your class to?
I was tremendously modest, good-looking, and talented. Other than that, I think I knew what I was doing. I don't know why. I didn't know whether an umpire was blown up or stuffed when I went. Well, but it just fell in place.
Well, what makes a good umpire? I mean, you have to make these calls right then.
Handling situations. When you've got 50 guys, 25 on a team after you, you better be able to come up with an answer. And I think that's the biggest thing. Situations are the biggest thing. And when you're young, you goof up a lot. You know, a guy comes out and he'll say, you're a, and you may not be, and you run him. But then you learn to handle it differently as you get older.
When you're out there, do you ever second-guess yourself, especially early in your career, say, ooh, maybe that was the wrong call? Or do you just have to be confident that what you did was right?
Well, I don't think you think about it, but you, of course, don't want to miss a call. And I think that's what's good about the replay thing now. You're not going to miss a call because they can look at it. If the mistake is made, they correct it. And I don't see anything wrong with that. There was a couple plays in my life that probably we could have taken. I can't remember what they were because I missed so few. Oh, Lord, I'm trying to be good. No, but no, I think it's better. I don't like the strike zone thing, you know, where they tap on their hat and you have to look. I don't know. There'd have been a sore on the top of their head if they'd have been with me some days. But you can only do it twice. Sharon said, well, why? What's bad about that? I said, I'll tell you the fallacy of it. What if they tap in the first or second inning, and you had the thing right, they lose their challenge. In the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, I could take you home. If you wanted to be evil, I'm not saying umpires would do that, but that's a fallacy, I think, that's in that system. And I think baseball is the greatest game in the world. I am prejudiced when I say that. From the bottom of me, I think it's the greatest sport in the world. Now, a lot of people disagree with them. They have their opinion. I have mine.
Why is it the greatest sport in the world?
Because it's been very, very good to me. But that's the biggest thing. And I love the game.
Do you still love to sit and watch a game?
I don't watch them as much as I... Now, when the playoffs and All-Star Game and World Series and things happen, yeah, I watch those more. I watch the Indians. Well, I mean, that's loud. Yeah, I can't get used to that.
What's your favorite team?
The first of every month's payday. I don't have a favorite. My wife loves the Indians. And I always told her, I said, Cleveland will never be in the World Series as long as I'm in baseball. And when they got in the World Series, I told her, I said, I went up to get her, she was going up to get her tickets that we had set aside for her. She and her dad went. And I said, well, you know, what are you going to do now? She said, I'm going over to the cemetery and get a lot because you're going to die. But, no, she and her dad went to the, when they played Miami, they went to the World Series, just the two of them. They were both Indian fans. And that would be, I could have given my father-in-law $40 billion, and it would have been a bigger gift than the tickets we gave him for the World Series.
You know, I don't think we ever talked about it. It's been in recent years when the Indians changed their name to the Guardians. What did you make of that big kerfluffle?
It's a bunch of crap. I would never, why didn't the Braves change? The Braves had more swagger than the Indians did. I mean, I think the Indian tribe up there, and I might be mistaken, but I think the Indians gave them money. And I'm sure they weren't complaining. They're probably mad now. I didn't. I never liked Chief Wahoo. He's a goofy-looking thing, but I like the Indians.
Did you ever dream we would get to a place where that would be a problem?
No. But there's a lot of things I never dreamed of.
In your life, what are the biggest changes that you've seen and went through?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. And I don't know really how to answer that. That's something for me because I usually have something to say, but you caught me at a loss. I don't know.
I get a good question off every now and again, so it's good when you can get that.
Yeah, you're room for 4,000.
That's exactly right. What a record. You know, we talked about it last year because it was the 50th anniversary of your call in the 75 World Series, and it's interesting to look at that now because when you Google Larry Barnett, that's one of the first things that comes up. When you go to your biography on Wikipedia, that has its own paragraph, that game, the call that you made, and all the fallout that happened. 50 years later, half a century later, why is that? I mean, that will be, God forbid, in your obituary somewhere along. You left that out of the obituary. No, that didn't make the cut. No, but I mean, in the news obituaries that will run, I'm sure that will be in there. Why was that such a seminal moment? 50 years later, people still talk about it.
Well, I know we, of course, had death threats. Susan, our oldest daughter, was very young at the time. Someone sent a threat that they were going to put a gun in her mouth and blow her head off. Sharon went through hell at that time. She was in bad shape. I had all kinds of security. She didn't go up to Boston at the end when we went for 6 and 7. And I had security up there. The FBI was with me all the time. And she was home in Prospect. And then we had security when I came to Prospect. Someone from the Columbus newspapers came and stood on the roof of their car in front of our house and took a picture of it and put it on the front page of the Columbus Dispatch. So that was just a tough time, I think, on her. And it was a tough time on me. I can't say it was easy on me, but we survived it.
It's 50 years ago. For people who don't remember, it's Game 3, World Series. You're in Boston. Who were the two teams that were playing?
We were in Cincinnati.
You were in, but Boston was playing.
Yeah, Boston was playing Cincinnati. It was the Cincinnati Reds and Boston Red Sox. Ed Armbruster was the hitter. Carlton Fisk was the catcher. The bunt. Armbruster was going to bunt, and the pitch was in, so he leaned back like that and bunted the ball fair, and he took off for first, and they have a collision play. They bump. Carlton picked the ball up. There was a guy on first and threw it into center field and then wanted interference. The rule says when there's contact between the hitter and the catcher in the home plate area, there's no violation and nothing should be called. That is in the Larry Barnett rule. And they had had that rule in Cleveland, and Cleveland protested. Lee McPhail, the president, Jimmy Evans, made the call. They protested, and he ruled against the protest because of that before it even happened to me. But then Bowie Kuhn hung me out to dry. I mean, he said all that. I remember one thing he said. He said, well, we got to change the way they pick the umpires for the World Series and all that. So it just didn't make any sense to me. And then he lied about it. So he didn't rate high as far as commissioners with me. But it was just a mess.
And as you said, death threats came of this to your home.
Yeah, it was tough on all of us.
And legendary broadcaster Kurt Gowdy, who was doing the game, kind of questioned your call.
Well, yeah, he buried me. But you could go back and look. He was a Boston announcer for years. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Then I let them have it. And the press, it was great that time. I was getting a lot of speaking engagements. Because the first thing they would say, World Series umpire Larry Barnett will be in Toledo, Ohio today. And you'd pick it up and read and see if I got killed. Seriously, I mean, but it was crazy. And but we survived that.
How serious did it get? How worried were you when you went out in public that something could happen?
Well, don't ever worry about someone that calls you and threatens you. Worry about the guy that just does it and doesn't threaten you. That's what the FBI told me. And I don't know. I was young then. I think I was only 30 years old. And my hair was dark. It's now blonde. I don't know. No, that didn't go in my obit. I told you I wrote my own obit. Why? You're the only one that brings that up.
I bring that up. Well, because, you know, I am still amazed. Half a century has passed, and if Larry Barnett, that's one of the first things that comes up is that game. You know, a 31-year career, not that it all comes down to one game, but gosh, boy, that got the coverage.
That's what I'm known for. That really is. And that is, that happens to other umpires also. I know Carson, when he was a little guy in grade school, they had a wax museum thing. You played someone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he told his teacher, he said, I would like to play my grandfather. And she said, now, Carson, you've got to play someone that's been on TV, been in the newspaper. He said, well, just Google him. And she Googled him, and she came back and said, yeah, you can pay him. So they made him a shirt and a hat, and he played me. And we were down there watching, and he'd tell kids, you know, what he was there, and he'd say, that's my grandpa right over there. So, Carson, I asked him the other day, I said, Carson, do you think you'd like to be an umpire? He said, well, I've thought about that. He said, I just have a question. If I go to the school and do well, can I go right to the big leagues? And I said, no, Carson, it doesn't work that way. He said, well, I don't think I want to do that.
He wanted to hop, skip, jump some things there. But, yeah. One more thing about that game. You say you've never questioned your call in that game.
No.
At the time, did you ever question it?
Well, at times when it was coming at me from all directions. I mean, Lord. I mean, Sharon was up in the stands. In Cincinnati, and the security from baseball went around her like we saw the other night. Not to that extent, but it was like they just descended up on her, and she wondered what the heck was going on. But then it was the same way, so it was tougher probably on her than it was tough on all of us, to be honest.
But as years have went by, people like Bob Costas have said you made the right call.
Yeah, he did, and Kurt didn't have a chance to do that before he passed. We'll see if I see him.
It could be a reunion. You never know. You and Kurt Gowdy. Well, there you go. After all these years. you know, it makes you think, though, as an announcer, what can happen. I I think I pulled a newspaper article last time you were in, and Kurt said, you know, he didn't intend for all that backlash to happen, but, you know, when you say something, it did.
It did. People, that's what's so crazy about now. That's why I try to stay away from watching politics, because it's, I always thought I would want to be in politics. I remember when I retired, the people came for me and wanted me to run for county commissioner. And I said, boy, that's a great idea. I could do something. I went home and I told Sharon, and she said, no, you're not. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, there's no doubt you would work your tail off and try to do stuff right for people. But I can see you at a meeting when someone said something that you didn't like, and you would use your baseball vocabulary, and your children would be very proud of you. So I called the people and said, I'm not interested in doing that. And that's true, but it's scary now. And they just get on the air and say whatever they want to say about anyone. And that has consequences, because there are people that listen to that, I think, and they get an idea, say, I can clean this up. And that's not good. We didn't have that.
What do you make of just what's going on here in Ohio right now? Mike DeWine about to leave after 8 years as governor. We've got two people running for office, Vivek Ramaswamy, Amy Acton. Neither have ever been elected to political office. Well, it'll be a first either way. What do you make of what's going on here?
Well, I was a young umpire when I came up. That was a first. I personally like, I can't say his name, Ramaswamy.
Yeah.
I couldn't spell it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've just listened to him. I've read about him. And that, well, I've already voted. Sharon and I always vote early. Voter. So that's who I voted for. But that's your choice. Yeah. I see a lot of guys in the VA hospital that lost legs and everything else to give us the right to be able to vote to whomever we want. And you should take that opportunity. If you vote for a Republican, if you vote for a Democrat, or if you vote for an independent, I know what I do. You do what you want to do, and that don't make you a bad person, but it doesn't make me a bad person either.
No.
Who are some of your favorite people who you've met throughout your career?
George H.W. Bush. He used to come in the dressing room a lot and sit and talk. We were in New York, and Stevie was our clubhouse guy. He was a retired fire lieutenant from New York that took care of our clubhouse, washed our clothes, cleaned our shoes and stuff like that. And there's a knock at the door, and I was a crew chief, and he came to me and he said, Chief, the president would like to come in. And I said, the president of what? He said, the president of the United States. I said, well, by all means, you better have him. It was President Nixon. And he came in. Now, he was no longer president. He sat and talked to us for 45 minutes. He was a baseball nut. And he talked. We had the best conversation. He took pictures with all of us, signed baseballs for us. I mean, you couldn't have. And then we were out in Anaheim, and the Angels went down there. And we went down, and we were at San Clemente and saw he and Pat. And he looked at us umpires. There were three of us, and he said, I didn't realize you guys were that big.
You know, Larry Nixon's an interesting guy. A lot of people loved him. A lot of people hated him. But most people who I have known who met him said he was kind of an awkward guy in person. Did you find him to be?
Well, he was a baseball nut. He loved baseball. And so we had a thing together. You know, he was super with us. Oh, we didn't talk anything about politics or anything. We talked about baseball, and he was interested in our families, what they did, how we got into this. And then we said, well, Mr. President, can we get pictures with you? So they had a photographer. They took pictures with all of us, and that's an honor. I don't care what party a person's in. You meet a president of the United States, that's an honor. That's the top man in our country.
And what are your memories of George H.W. Bush?
He was a humble man. And then I had W when he owned the Rangers. So I've got a baseball with President George H.W. Bush, Barbara. Then Sharon and I went to the White House with the DAV, and I took that ball. and W was there, and I asked him to sign a ball. And he looked at it, he said, not with those people. So I've got all four of them on one World Series baseball. A.W., Laura, Barbara, and George.
What is it like to meet a president? Not everybody gets that chance.
Well, you call him Mr. President. You don't call him George. We had one guy. He came in the dressing room out in San Diego, and he called him George. And he was an old umpire. He's in the Hall of Fame. And I thought, geez, you call him Mr. President. I don't care who it is. They're entitled to that.
Were there any Hollywood or celebrity people that you met that stick out in your mind?
Well, they come a lot. Stallone would come. You get a little more than that in California. And they probably got more in Los Angeles than we did in Anaheim. That's why they changed the name of the Angels from the Anaheim Angels to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. But you see more of them in Los Angeles. You see them at the All-Star World Series and stuff more than other people. Kevin Costner was around. Tom Selleck, I was in a movie, Mr. Baseball, with him. I played the umpire in the movie, and I didn't get the Academy Award, but I thought I probably should have, but I had a very small part.
Now, how'd you get that role?
Well, they called. His agent called, and we had to go to New York. We filmed that in Yankee Stadium, and yeah, it was neat. I've got a brass belt buckle from Mr. Baseball. And it's from Selleck. And there's a note in there, thanks for the contribution to the movie. What a nice man he was. He was a super guy. But
When I just want to double back to that play in the World Series. How do you feel the media treated you during that time?
They destroyed me. They tried to. Most of them. They were relentless. I got a scrapbook full of death threats from that. You know, Sharon will probably burn those when I'm gone. But no, they I don't know. They just weren't fair. I didn't think.
What was the high of your career and what was the low?
The low was probably that. Yeah. The high was 31 years. Being blessed to be there that long and only be 54 years of age when I retired.
Why did you retire at 54?
I just wanted to. I'd had enough on the road. And then they asked me to be supervisor of umpires, and I did that for a year and a half. And I just didn't want to do that no more, so I just quit that.
How has baseball changed? Do you think it's better or worse now?
They make a lot more money. You know, you go, what's Ohtani? He makes, what, $30 million a year? My God. He makes more than most countries. But, I mean, no, and I don't blame the players for that, the owners. They must be making the money. I said to Jerry Lane, whom we've been friends since he was a little kid, and I said, how do they justify that? He said, think of this. Every kid in America and every kid in Japan has an Ohtani shirt. They alone make that salary on what they sell in his memorabilia. And it is true if you think about it. I don't blame the players. If they can make that, that's what the market plays. What do you think Joe DiMaggio would have made now? He said to Mr. Steinbrenner, what would you call George if you were playing today? He said, partner.
That's right.
So I did meet Joe DiMaggio. He was the batting coach for the Oakland A's when I first came up, and you didn't call him Joe. You called him Mr. DiMaggio.
He certainly had that kind of presence.
Like Mary Marilyn Monroe, you got to call him Mr.
That's right. You got to give them the right introduction. We're chatting with legendary baseball umpire Larry Barnett here, WGH Talk Radio. Remember, we're streaming live on the internet, WWGH1071.com, and you can get the free TuneIn app on any mobile device and search WGH Talk to listen any time of the day. And Larry, during this conversation, we're getting a message from somebody who's listening out there this morning. Said, my dad was told 1 year and live seven with a cancer diagnosis. That's coming from one of our listeners out there this morning. So, you know, you never know, I guess, in the end.
Well, give me your oncologist. No, I know that's possible. I'm just going by what they said, but no one knows. But the big doctor in the sky.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Retirement. What has retirement been like? What have these years been like?
The park has really been my life. Not my life, I shouldn't say that. My family's been my life, but my enjoyment's been that park every day. I love the park. I go down there. I help mow, clean bathrooms, and just do whatever. But I just enjoy it.
And, you know, retirement for a lot of people is not fun. They feel, you know, they're just sitting at home, not much to do anymore. I think they feel like they lose their purpose. That never happened with you.
No, because and I think it probably is the park. I have a purpose. People go down there, you see me riding my golf cart over there about 8 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes I don't leave till 4, 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm there all day. Sharon knows where I'm at. The guys over there are watching me. They don't let me stick my hand in the mower or anything. So it's just a great, great thing. And that's, like I said, I'm just going to ask people that rather than flowers, I would like for each and every one to please make a donation to the park, whatever it is. It'll help something over there and keep that park. The park's running great. But that's what I want to do.
And you have a field named for you over there?
Larry Barnett Field. There's a Jerry Lane Field. And there's a Bob Buck Rogers Field. And then we have a T-ball field over there also.
At one point, you said there was one more thing you wanted to get done over there, one more field named for somebody.
Well, for Randy Mobley. Randy, of course, is a prospect guy, an Elgin guy. He was the president of the International League, my golly, forever. Harold Cooper got him started. And if we ever get a place to put a field, they've turned one area into a nature thing. That I mow the trails this week where they can walk through and there's benches where they can sit. But that was my dream, to have a field for Randy. And that's the only thing that I've failed to do. And that bothers me because he's a great guy. He's a prospect boy. And, well, there's four of us that baseball is still paying through their pension plan. Jerry, Buck, myself, and Randy. That's pretty amazing for a town of 1,000 people. Yeah. Usually down there, every time a woman has a baby, a guy leaves town. So the population stays. I shouldn't say that about my old town.
What do you attribute that to, you all coming from that area?
It must be the water of the Scioto. I don't know. It is amazing if you think about that. I mean, Buck had over 30 years as a player, manager, and a coach. Jerry had over 30 years in the big leagues, as did I. And Randy was president of AAA forever. Started back with Harold Cooper. Got him started, if I believe that I'm correct on that. And did a great job. He ran AAA baseball.
Do you have a philosophy in life that you have lived by?
Try to help people. That's the biggest thing. Try to be good people. I don't think I've always been good at that at times. People I didn't like, I don't. But that's what you shoot for. Sometimes I miss the mark.
You know, it is hard to forgive people. Can you forgive but maybe not forget?
Oh, you have to. You have to have forgiveness. Because we'll ask him for forgiveness. And that's how we'll get to the place we want to go.
How long have you had this strong faith now?
Probably since I retired and started with the church. And not as strong as it is now. It's stronger now. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say, no, it just happened 30 years ago. No, it's getting stronger because I know the importance of it. And it's important to me because it's where I want to go.
You have, you've talked about telling your congregation. What did the minister or preacher say to you? Is he giving you any comforting words of advice?
Yeah, I mean, just he's there. He's there to help. And they all are. Get a lot of hugs from the women. So that's nice. I don't know how Sharon appreciates that, but I think she understands it.
How do you see the road ahead in the next, you know, year?
Just like I said, tomorrow if I get up, it's going to be Thursday. After that, it'll be Friday. It's just day today, today. And I really believe that. If we want to do something If we want to get in the car and go to Columbus, see the kids, we do that. And that's the way I want it to be.
Do you take these car trips these days, this time, with people who you love? Is it more meaningful now since the diagnosis?
Well, I think so, yes. I'd love to have them all live in the same house with me. I don't know how that would work because they have different things. They have their own lives. But we are very close, and I think their mother keeps us that way.
And at this point, they're okay, and just, I guess, adapting with what's going on.
Yeah, they seem to be. They're grown. They're not, you know, Carson will be 17 May 5th, so he's the youngest of the group, but they're grown. They understand life, and they understand what happens.
What has been the hardest thing to do in the last month since you got this diagnosis?
To set them all down and tell them. We did that. I wanted to do that. And told them all at once. And I just was honest with them. And just like I asked the oncologist to be honest with me, I was brutally honest with my family. That was hard.
Yeah, well, I would imagine. What was the reaction? I mean, obviously, not good.
Well, mostly an adult reaction. They were sad. There were some tears. I'm not going to say there weren't any tears. I didn't cry because I'd cried before. But it was normal. It's what I expected. But I think they appreciated the fact that Sharon, their mother, and I told them. They didn't learn it from someone else. I mean, everyone in Prospect knows it now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we were just honest with them.
Is it hard to kind of realize, I mean, we're having a lot of fun with this morning and certainly describing it, but is it hard to sit and think, you say you think about it every day, when it crosses your mind, is it hard to believe that this has happened?
No. I knew it was going to. It's going to happen to all of us. Whether you believe it or not, it will happen. No one's going to get out alive. And I like I've always said, I ask to at least give me time to make sure that I'm ready to go where I want to go. And God has granted me that wish, and I will not screw it up.
And you feel you have that wish?
Yes. Yes.
And that is where the comfort comes from at this point.
It's got to. I'm blessed. I've been blessed with all the things we talked about. How lucky I've been. I wanted to be a state highway patrolman because I love that Smokey the Bear hat. When I was growing up, that's what I wanted to do. And I'd have probably been a good one. But that's not the way I went.
Do you ever think, well, obviously that, but do you ever think of, was there ever a crossroads in your life where you thought I could go this way, I could go that way?
No. When I started umpiring in the Midwest League at 19 years old, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. My second year in the Midwest League, I was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and there was a guy by the name of Charlie Berry, who was a NFL official, a longtime American League umpire. He scouted. He was the only scout the American League had. Came to see me in Cedar Rapids, and I was working with a guy by the name of Bruce Froming, who had been umpiring forever, and we went out to breakfast with Mr. Berry, and he told Bruce, he said, "You're the greatest umpire I've ever seen in my life." And Bruce said to him, I'm a 20-year-old kid. He said to him, "Mr. Berry, when Cal Hubbard, who was a supervisor of umpires in the American League, takes anyone under 6'5", call me." And I thought, oh, Jesus. And then he said to me, "You're the laziest looking umpire I've ever seen in my life. You're doing this wrong, that wrong. You're this, that, these, and those." And now he leaves. And I'm about lower than whale manure, okay? I'm down. And Bruce said, "You're going to big leagues." And after the first year in the Texas League, they bought me.
That's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And you stayed there for many, many years. Yep. You know, do you think there's when you 81 years old, certainly not a bad life. You've went through some things, death threats back in 75. Now going through this health issue, went through some other health issues. Family members have had their things. What's the lesson you've learned from life in general? What have you learned about it?
Enjoy every day. And I think I've done it most of the time. There's been some bumps, some bruises. But basically, I've had a fantastic life. I have. I've got the best wife I could ever have had. I've got two great daughters and a grandson that's unbelievable.
Is there anything at this point in your life that does make you emotional about this whole thing?
No, I think I'm past that. Now, when I get around them, if they get emotional, Sharon and I'll sit and watch a movie on TV and cry, and I say, "Oh, it's just allergies." But no, as long as they, but because I think that I'm holding it, they hold it. Now, like I said, the youngest daughter, we don't talk about it. She don't want to talk about it. But she calls me every morning, and she said, "I'm on my way to work. I just called to tell you I love you." And she does that every morning about 7:15. And then she hangs up, and then Susie will call. And then in the evening, Carson calls. That's when he always asks me what I'm doing, and I told him, like I told you, I said, I sit on my butt all day and shower and shave, and I get two checks a month. He said, "How do you get a job like that, Papa? I'd love that."
At this point, do you just eat what you want, do what you want, enjoy yourself?
You better believe it. If I want to eat a strawberry sundae or a banana split, I will. Well, what am I going to do, live another month? I mean, I don't worry about anything. Because I think if I get too heavy, they'll just get a bigger urn. but no, I do exactly what I want to do. I used to love to chew tobacco, and I did that my whole life. And my brother-in-law was a dentist, and he used to send me to Dr. Murphy every year to have my mouth checked, make sure I didn't have oral cancer. And after a while, about 30-some years ago, I quit doing that. And sometimes I said, "Boy, I'd like to have a chew." Stan said to me, my friend here in Marion, he said, "Let's get a bottle of whiskey and a couple cigars and go down and sit in the park." I'm not going to do that. But no, I don't know.
For people who know you over the years, what do you think the biggest misconception is that people have about you? Do you think there is a misconception?
I don't know. Some probably think I'm arrogant. And they're probably right in some. I can't deny that at times I have been. I don't know. I think people know that I try to help people. I've always said if Sharon knew how much money that I gave to the park every year, we'd probably been in a divorce a long time ago. But that's I think she knows I did it and she doesn't mind.
How do you want people, because you're in the history books, you've got your Wikipedia page, people can Google you, so people are going to remember you. How would you like them to remember you in your time?
He worked at his job. He took care of his family. And he tried to do what was right. Those three things, that'd be pretty good.
What advice would you have for somebody on how to live a good life?
Start believing in God a lot earlier. I've always believed in God, but my faith has gotten me through this too. Because I believe I'm going to a better place. I don't know what that place is or how it looks or anything. And like I said, if Billy Martin and Earl Weaver's there, I made the wrong turn. I shouldn't say that about them. Billy came to this town when he gave up a $10,000 speech in Cleveland, come here to speak to our athletes of the month for nothing. So he did a lot of good things in his life.
What is something the audience who thinks they know everything about you don't know? What's something people don't know about Larry Barnett?
Jeez, those are questions. I've never really thought about that. I guess I probably should. I don't know. I'm just like anyone else. I'm scared of things, of the unknown. I think we all are.
Well, and I think, honestly, the conversation we're having this morning, that's what most people have the problem with mortality, is that it's the unknown. No matter what your belief is, I think in the back of everybody's mind, they think, I don't know for sure. And that's worrisome to people.
Well, I think I'm getting closer to the belief that I know what I can do if I do the right things. Because I believe that He will forgive us. And He said He's making a home for us. And we'll live there forever.
Finish this sentence. Larry Barnett is...
I think a good guy.
I think that's exactly right. In the last minute we have here, Larry, I can't thank you enough for coming in today. When I heard this news about your health update, I called you. And we were talking about some of the interviews we'd done over the years, and you said, well, hey, I'm still here. I'll still come in and do the interviews. I'm so glad you did. And this is not going to be the last interview. I'm going to call. I hope you know, because I want you to come back.
We'll give you an update. That's what I want to do. I just ask the people that are listening to pray for me and pray for my family. And because you're talking to the luckiest guy on the face of the earth.
Is there anything you want to leave the audience with this morning?
No, just ask for everyone's prayer.
I'm sure everyone will certainly do that. Larry, you've always been so kind to me over the years. You've come in early in the morning and late at night when I know you'd rather be in bed, and you were even out here tossing fruitcakes last year. So it's been a pleasure to know you and to still know you, because, again, this isn't the end.
Well, the worst thing I think I ever done was that fruitcake thing. That's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
And it made the papers.
Yeah. No, that was good, though. You do a lot of good stuff like that.
Well, thank you. Legendary Major League Baseball umpire Larry Barnett, again, the news this morning that we talked about, diagnosed with stage 4 terminal cancer. But you know what? Good attitude, good shape today, and going to go on tomorrow. And Larry, like I said, we're going to do another interview without question.
Hey, without question, let's do it.
Absolutely. Larry Barnett, for this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.